not what I wanted. May have screwed up the recording, I hope not. And the additional property is that we need to show the operations on the trees preserve the invariant. So this is where we stopped, and there is a slightly slicker way of proving the correctness of an implementation, a tree implementation, and that I will just sketch here. We won't go into the details. And the idea is that you don't directly go from the tree to the set, but you go in two stages. You go first from the tree to an ordered list, or to the list of its leaves, to the in-order traversal, and from that to the set. And the idea is that on the tree, on the list projection of the tree, you can already express a number of the properties that you need to express, namely, in particular, the sortedness. When is it a binary search tree? Something is a binary search tree if and only if the projection onto the leaves, the in-order traversal, is a sorted list. And so instead of talking about trees, you can also talk about the lists, and they tend to be easier to work with. And so we're using a predicate sorted just for this context here tells you it's sorted as true for the empty list and the singleton list, and for a list of length greater than one, the first two elements must be in the less than relation, and the rest must be sorted. And so this means that all the elements are distinct, and this is what corresponds to a binary search tree, where really all the elements are distinct and you don't have duplicates. So this is not the standard definition of sorted on a list where you would allow less than or equal between the elements, but it's the one that's required for this particular situation, where we want to express the sortedness on the list is supposed to express the same property as the sortedness as the binary search tree property on the tree level. And this whole thing doesn't have anything to do with whether the tree is unbalanced or what exactly the tree looks like. As long as you can project the tree onto a list, you can express the required properties on the list level. And so we just assume there is some invariant on the so you have some representation type S for your sets, typically some kind of tree, and we assume also there is some invariance property, typically some kind of balancedness property. For our unbalanced trees that we've been discussing so far, that would be trivial, that would just say true, every tree is invariant, but there might be, for other kinds of trees, there might be structural invariance that we can't capture, that need to be captured as well. So we assume the whole, what I'm going to tell you about, is just also parameterized by an invariant property on these the implementing type. And then, how do we express the correctness of the insert function on the tree? The correctness can be expressed by the following law, namely that if you insert an element into the tree, and then you take the in-order projection of the tree, so you get a list, that should be the same thing than if you take the in-order projection of the tree that you started with and then insert the element x into the list, where insert list is an auxiliary function that inserts an element into a sorted list. And you may assume that structural invariant, whatever it is, and you may assume that the tree is sorted, which we are now expressing by the fact that the in-order traversal of the tree gives you a sorted list. So you've now, in this step, you're making a connection between trees and lists, the lists that make up the leaves of the tree, and this is the correctness property that the insert function on the tree should have. Basically, it's saying the insert function on the tree behaves like the insert function on the list of elements. And the nice thing is we don't need to separately say, this must be the binary search tree invariant must be preserved. This is a side effect of this property, or rather this property up there also tells you that the new tree is again sorted. Why? Because you take here on the right-hand side, you take a projection of the tree, which by assumption is sorted. You insert something, and then by a generic property of the insert list function, if you insert an element into a sorted list, you again get a sorted list. And so the nice thing about this specification is that it gives you in one go both the functional correctness and the preservation of the invariant. So that's why this is a nice approach. And you could do the same thing for delete, except that there you need the delete function on lists rather than insert function on lists. Otherwise everything is the same. For isIn, you need to prove that the isIn function on the tree is the same as taking all the elements of the in order of the tree. So converting, you take the tree here, then you take the set of the elements in the tree, and then you check whether X is in there. So again, you you go via the in order projection of the tree to relate the function on the tree and the function on the list. Here, the function on the list is the set function. So I've gone through this very quickly for the following reason that the correctness proofs of all the search trees that we're going to see here can be automated based on this principle. And therefore, because it's practically automatic, I'm not going to say much more about it. And that's fully in line with what you have in an algorithms course. Typically, if you get into an algorithms course, you're assumed to see that the insert and the delete functions are correct, and it's never talked about. What is talked about is that the structural invariants are maintained. And we're going to do the same thing here, except that we feel good about it because we know it can be automated and that we don't need to talk about it. It's not that we're sweeping something under the carpet here. But yes, the structural invariants, they still need to be dealt with. They are not automatic. And they are very much, they depend very much exactly on what form your tree takes. I don't think there's a general recipe to cover those. And therefore, for the rest of the course, we will concentrate on those. And the fact that the tree is a binary search tree and is, the order of elements is maintained and insert really inserts an element property properly, that is not something I want to prove here because in principle it's automatic. Okay, and now we come to the first of our two trees, and I'm not quite sure whether we'll cover both the 2-3 trees and the red black trees today, but we'll certainly get through the 2-3 trees. And what's the idea here? The idea is that you have two kinds of nodes. Of course, you have the leaves, but you have two kinds of internal nodes, namely the two nodes that we're used to with two children and the three nodes which have three children. All of this can be found in the material that's in the repository in the file 2-3.set.theory. Was too long for the slide, the name. Yes, this is what I just said. This is the form that the 2-3 trees take, or their nodes take, with these two different kinds of nodes now. And we will use the same syntactic abbreviations for a 2-node as before, and of course for a leaf also I will use this abbreviation. And for a 3-node, we just extend the notation for the 2-node and write the 3-node like that. You can also write node 2 and node 3 and leaf. But, so the isIn function is completely unremarkable. The only new clause is the isIn for a 3-node, and there, well, you would, if you check whether the element X is in this tree here, of course, you check first, you compare it with the one of the two elements in the tree, and depending on the outcome of the comparison, you if it's less than the A here, it must be in the left subtree, you go in there, and if it's greater than the A here, you have to compare it with the B, And then if you, depending on the outcome, you branch into one of the two remaining subtrees. So everything as we're used to. And of course, we're assuming here the usual ordering invariant on the tree. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to use the comparison to find out which subtree the element is in. So that's done. We don't need to talk about that anymore. The more interesting one is, well, the insertion function, deletion function, but before we get to them, we will come up, we will introduce the structural invariant, and that is really quite surprising if you haven't come across those trees before. The 2-3 trees have the nice invariant that all the leaves are at the same level. That's not something you can do with the 2-tree, the binary tree. If it's not a power of 2 minus 1, then you can't arrange it in a way that all leaves are at the same level. But here you can actually do so. As usual. Right. All the leaves are at the same level. That's the invariant. And so, of course, for a leaf, that is true. And for a two-node, that's true. If the subtrees satisfy the predicate and the height of the two subtrees is the same. And for a three-node, it's the same thing. All three subtrees have to satisfy the invariant, the balanced invariant, and the height of all three subtrees must be the same. So that is the invariant we will maintain for our 2-3 trees. And so how does insertion work? Well, if you have a leaf, of course you make it in a 2-2 node. If you have a 2 node and you insert something, you can make it into a 3 node. But of course, if you have 3 node, then you have a problem. There's an overflow. And so what happens is you pass one element back up to the tree, back up the tree, which will then have to be accommodated further up. Of course, at some point, the tree will really overflow, and then the height of the tree will increase. But as long as possible, you will do these first two cases, and then eventually, when you have an overflow, you try to accommodate further up until it reaches the top. And to mimic or to model this situation, we have two possible return values from the insertion function. One is it says, I'm passing you back up a tree, and the new element could be inserted into the tree without increasing the height. And I will mark this by the return value of this form. So the constructor ti, I will just call it t. The little I just stands for insert. We'll also have, for delete, we'll have the same situation. Constructor t tells you this is a proper tree. You don't need to do anything about it. You can just put it back where it came from. And then there's the overflow situation, where which I denote by up with, because we're passing something that has to go further up. So there we don't pass up a full tree, we pass up a left and a right subtree, and this element that somehow needs to go further up that couldn't be accommodated in the subtree that we came from. And this is just the data type that you see here with the two constructors T and up. And in order to convert these two elements of this up data type, so I've called the data type up as well, as same as the constructor, but with lowercase. And then there's a conversion function that takes a return value that's being passed, that came back from the insert function, and turns it into a proper tree. And the conversion is pretty obvious. In the first case, it's just the tree itself, and in the second case, you turn this triple that you get back into two node. So let's now look at the insertion function. Well, on the top level, you call the auxiliary ins function that does all the work, and that gives you one of these return values, up or t, and then you convert that back into a proper tree. And the interesting one is that function that has almost the same type, but it doesn't return a tree. It returns one of these up values, which was one of these two kinds, a T or an up. Well, there we see it in there, a T or an up. And the first few clauses are pretty obvious. So if you insert something to the empty tree, well, it is an overflow situation. The empty tree couldn't accommodate it. So you say, please pass this up, and this is what it looks like. And of course, in one level further up, it can just be converted into a two node. So this is the more interesting one. If you insert into a two node, and right. So we will have to figure out where it should go. Is it equal to A? Is it less than A? Is it greater than A? So we make a case distinction, case comparison of X and A. And I will drop the equality case, that's obvious, but the less than case is the interesting one. So in the less than case, what do we do? Well, we insert x into L, of course, but then we have to examine what the result is, looks like. So, case insert xL of, and if we're lucky, the insertion could be done without increasing the height of the tree, no overflow, then you just you're in the situation that you put this tree, and then you just, let's call this L, in fact, or L prime, because it's a modified L, and then you can just do what? What do you return as the value from this tree?
L prime?
Yes, but you can't return a triple. Look at the type. The type has to be it has to be one of those up values.
So tree.
Pardon?
Tree
is the function that converts an up value into a tree. The big T, yes, because we're happy. And what do we put inside? A tree has to be inside, so we make this into a two node. Okay. So this tells the person further up, you're okay, this is just a normal tree, you don't need to do any adjustment. But of course, you could also get an up value of, call this, I don't know, L1 and B and L2. That means an overflow happens in the subtree, and we now have to accommodate this value. We have to insert this bigger thing into our 2 node here. So what do?
We
make it a 3 node, right? And then we're happy, so we pass back up a T and a 3 node where this bit here is is what L became, and so it's here we have L1, then we have B, we have L2, then we have A and R. Right. Okay, that one was easy, and the other cases are symmetric. I mean, the other case with the greater than is symmetric, and the equality is trivial. Every once in a while, the Acrobat reader doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Yes. I don't think that helped that I typed escape, because I think... Oh! It did help to type escape, right? So, now let's look at the 3 case. And we will, again, just look at one of the subcases, namely that the thing we're trying to insert, the X, should go into L. And the other cases are symmetric. So, the first comparison would be S up there, conic X, A, I guess it's still called A, yep, of, and if it's less than, then something has to go into A, into L. So again, we check what happens, case insert XL off, and if we're lucky, nothing changed, the height didn't change, and we can just return almost the same thing up here, L prime A M D and R, if I'm correct. Yes. So that much is just similar to the previous case. But now, of course, we have a problem if there is an overflow. L1, what did I use as a letter? C. L2. There. We can't do things as nicely as up here, because now we're inserting into a 3 node, and we have an overflow from a below, and therefore that 3 node would also overflow. And so we have to pass things further up. So it will be an up. But of what? What are the 2 subtrees, and what's the element that we will have to return? So let's first decide what is probably the element that will be at the root that we will return. We have 3 possibilities here. Just a guess. You don't have to know. Yeah. N is the subtree. I'm asking for the element. Or is it A or B or C?
It doesn't matter, I think.
It does matter.
If you're in the left case, then we should use A.
We should use A just by the sort of informal or intuitive reason that A is kind of in the middle, and there's a C on the left and a B on the right. So probably it makes sense to return the A. And if we accept that, we now have to figure out what are the 2 subtrees to the left and to the right of the A. And they are quite easy now. Any suggestions?
Well,
That's not key schema, right?
Yes.
And the right subtree
is regular node. This is your
Well, this is also a regular node.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's what's left over from the three node when you take away the L and the A. It's M and the R. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And that's essentially it. So it's, as you can see, it's really intuitive. You didn't need much guidance. You could come up with the code almost yourself. Yeah, this is the full code, but it's not big enough for the slide. I mean, the slide is not big enough for the code. But the essential cases are the two that you see up here. Righto. Now, of course, does this really preserve the invariant? If it's balanced before, is it balanced after the insertion? And this is what I want to look at in more detail. Yes, there we are. And surprisingly, it's an induction on T. So, but we'll go through the proof and we'll find that there's a little problem there that we need to fix. So we will just look at one case. Of course, not the leaf case, but the case that it's a two node. We're inserting an A, so we call the thing the node X. And we will look at a subcase of that, namely that the A that we're inserting is less than the X. And of the cases, because now when we look at the code, then there will be another case distinction. What does the insert of XL look like? Is it a T or an up? And we will look at the T case. So there are plenty of other cases that we're not covering, but I'm just trying to show one particular effect. So you insert the A into L and you get back a T L prime. So this is the situation we're considering. So we have to show that this thing here that we get back out is really satisfies the invariant again. And so we assume, because we're trying to prove an implication, we assume that the left-hand side, the T is balanced. So this is the case that our T is equal to this LXR. So balance of T means that left and right are balanced. And their height is the same. So we're not assuming this equality, we're assuming this assumption, and I'm just unfolding what it stands for. And what we have to show? We have to show that balance balance of tree of ins A T. Now, in the subcase that we're in, this int of at becomes, well, becomes this thing here. This is what we get out. This is the return value. So this is equal to balance, and the tree function will just strip off the capital T. So it's just balance of L prime, what is the one in the middle, X, and R. And so what we have to show is balance of L prime and balance of R and height of L prime equals height of R. So where does this come from? What kind of proof are we using? Yes. Yeah.
I'm not sure, but we want to show that the height of L prime is the height of R.
You're now looking at this one. I'm looking at this one.
Yeah, and we have to show that L prime is balanced. But we can't directly use the induction hypothesis to do that.
Why can't we use the induction hypothesis here?
Because L prime is not equal to L.
Right, but the induction hypothesis is an implication that says for the subtree, namely, we have a subtree L of the original tree, and so the induction hypothesis tells us if that subtree is balanced, then the tree I of insert of A in L will also be balanced. So induction hypothesis is this one. Balance L implies balance of tree of ints, I think it's A there, it's a fortunate choice, A, L. Right. Who understands this? Nobody? Oh, one
question. So, if we do this, then, no.
It's just plain structural induction, but we're proving the implicational statement, so of course the induction hypothesis will also be implicational. And it's we're using the induction hypothesis for the left subtree. But this is something from the assumption, then we assume that the whole tree is balanced, and therefore also the left subtree is balanced. And therefore, by induction hypothesis, the tree of ints AL will also be balanced. What is ints AL? That is the subcase we're in here. Ints AL is just T of L prime, so tree of it is just L prime. So by induction hypothesis, we get that, we get this. Now, we have had only two people who said they understood this. Then I would like for those people who didn't understand it to explain to me why they didn't understand this. So let's pick some of you, like you. Why didn't you understand the reasoning?
I'm a bit confused about this R and L prime.
L is the one that you put into the recursive call, and L prime is the thing that you get out. That's the subcase we're in. If you go back to the code, here's the proper part of the code. This is the code that we're looking at, and we're in this subcase, the less than subcase, and we're in the subcase where the insertion of the element into the left subtree gave us this T of L prime back. And so that's why we're also using the induction hypothesis for the left subtree, because that's the one we're going into. Still doesn't seem to be, so doesn't seem to fit. So
maybe it's just the way we go through the proof, because it seems like using the induction hypothesis to show directly your assumption.
No, we're not showing the assumption. And the assumption is that balance of L, and with the help of the induction hypothesis, we get balance of L prime.
That's exactly what's in the assumption.
No, this is the assumption. What can you
do?
The conclusion. Yeah, of course we're trying to show the conclusion.
So that's obvious, but it seems like you're using the induction hypothesis too directly. So we're supposed to show a base case first, right?
We're looking at the induction case. We're just looking at T equals a node, a two node. So, I mean, the base case is separate, but the base case is easy. And I'm just showing you part of the induction, or part of what we have to prove.
Okay, I suggest we just move on, because...
Yes, it is.
You're captivated at some point, and
what about you? What's your... Do you have hang up about the proof?
I don't have anything to say at the moment.
Okay, well, that's a bit disappointing, but because it is a structural induction on the tree, as we've seen in many cases before. But maybe we do better move on. Yeah. So where does this come from? Maybe you have something to say about that.
Given by the assumptions.
Yes, thank you. So that's directly one of the assumptions. But where does that come from? That doesn't come from anywhere. So this is just an example to show you that what you want to prove may be too weak, and you will have to augment it. And so in fact, what we do, we will need to strengthen our property. We will not just show that if you start from a balanced tree and you insert, you get a balanced tree back, but we will also show something about the height, the relation of the height between the initial and the final tree. And for that purpose, we need to introduce a new function, because the height that we get out, the tree that we get out isn't really a tree, it's one of these tagged values with up or t, and so we define a height function on these return values, so from alpha up to nat, and the first line is pretty obvious, height of, if it's a normal tree, it's just the height of the tree inside. The second line is funny, Let's give you an intuition why that is. Let's think of this new function, this new height function on the up values. Let's think of it as what is the height of the old tree. So that height function doesn't give you the height of the new tree, it gives you back the height of the old tree. And here, the old tree is just
the height of the new tree and the height of the old tree are the same, so you just take that height function. But here you have a growth, and therefore the height of the old tree is not the height of this triple LAR, but the height just of L or R. I could have chosen L of R here as well. And this is because you want to differentiate the two situations, and therefore you just take the height of L here. And it's the height of the previous tree. And then you can just say, the height of T, that must be the old height of the thing that we get back from the up function. And if you have that definition, then this proof will work out, because then this will come from the induction hypothesis. So this will now be, it could come directly from the induction hypothesis. So even if you find that part confusing because you don't quite understand the definition of H, never mind that. Just take it as a formal definition, and you can go through the details and show that for the third bit here, this follows from the additional induction hypothesis. Of course, now we have a stronger induction hypothesis, namely that this also holds for the left subtree. So the induction hypothesis will be, in fact, the induction hypothesis will now have, I will not go through the, well, yeah, it'll have this, and the height of insert AL is equal to the height of L. And what is this? Insert AL, that's just our T of L prime, and H of it is just L. So you get this just becomes the whole thing height of L prime. And therefore, you have height of L prime equals height of R as, height of L prime equals height of L as an induction hypothesis. You have assumption height of L equals height of R, and therefore this thing follows. So, this was just a lengthy, I didn't think it would be that lengthy, explanation of why you can't just prove the balance property by itself, but you also need to prove in parallel a height property. And then eventually you get this corollary that it also works for the insert function, because the insert function is just this one here, tree I of ins. That was the definition, if you go back. There. Insert is just tree I of ins. Deletion. Idea is similar, just in the other direction. A three node becomes a two node. A two node, that becomes an underflow, and the height it decreases. And so what we do on the way up, when we try to compensate for this underflow, we will have to merge siblings on the way up. That will be the crucial idea. And so let's just look at the code. Before we get to the code. So now again, we have these two possible return values. One is the height was unchanged, and that was documented by T. And the other one, the height decreased by one, and that is documented by this up. So you get a tree back, but you know the tree is one, the height is shorter than it used to be. And so you can't just put it back into place, because then the height invariant would be broken. And so this is the data type with these two constructors, T and up. And we again get a function that just projects out the tree inside these two constructors. And this is the delete function. It's just defined as an auxiliary function del that returns one of these up values, and then the tree function that projects it into a normal tree. And this is the one that we really want to look at in detail. And the base cases where you have an empty tree and you have a tree with a singleton node, these are not very interesting. So let's go right away to the interesting case where you want to delete an element from a two node. And the principle is actually quite simple. So we have two different situations. One is if the element that you're deleting is actually in one of the subtrees, well, then you delete the element from that subtree, and then you call an auxiliary function node21. What does that mean? Please construct. We're in the case where we delete it from a two node, and in the first argument, there is the deletion took place in the first argument. So this function node21 knows that A and R are good, but the first element that may be is one of these up values that needs to be that could be an underflow. So let's just look at this situation. Let's just define function node21, and again it will be fairly intuitive how to define it. And we have two situations. The easy situation is that there was no underflow in the first argument, so you just get back a t of some L prime, let's call it, and then some A and some R, and then you can just put it back together into a two node, but you need to keep this constructor t. So that's the easy one. But of course, you may also have an underflow in the first argument. So then you have to differentiate what these trees, what the other tree looks like, the other tree looks like. And first, let's look at the situation where this is a two node. R1, B, R2. Yes. But that's not type correct. It needs to be an up value. So which constructor does it deserve?
The big T. The big T.
Who thinks it's a big T? One, two, three, four, five. Looks good, but it's wrong. It's actually up. Why? I mean, at the moment when I'm looking at it, it also looks. No, it doesn't look. You see, this came originally from a tree with a two node, and inside this two node, and inside something else here on that side. But now we have taken out one level. This was a two node above and a two node inside, and we squashed this. This is just one three node, so we have lowered the height. And the height here, from here, of course, was already lowered, so it was okay to move that into that position. So inside, things are okay, they're all on the same height, but taken together, the height has decreased because we have this nesting of one tree, of this tree inside a bigger tree has been squashed, and therefore it's an up value. It tells us this the whole subtree has decreased in height. And then we have the third case where this is a three node. And now, in fact, we can, by careful rearrangement, make it into a T. So this will be a T. So this will recover the original height, but how does the thing inside look? Yeah?
It's a two node with two.
Yes, that's correct. So it's a two node with two nodes. The first one is, well, basically you just need to go through the subtrees one by one. So it should be, just from the ordering constraint, should be L and A and I guess then R1. Then comes the B into the middle of the upper two node, and then the rest, the R2, C, and R3. Correct? Yeah. So. Yes. And of course, there is a dual function node 2, 2, where the where this up value sits in the last argument rather than the first argument. But it's just symmetric. Okay, that's basically it. I'm not going to prove those two lemmas, or rather that lemma and the corollary is direct from it. We're in a similar situation as before. We want to show that balancedness is preserved, and now we have these additional auxiliary functions, and that leads to a number of auxiliary little lemmas that we need. And of course, we also need to prove, together with the balancedness, we need to prove a height invariant, that the height changes in a certain. Of course, it may decrease, but we will use you can use the same trick as before with this height function on these up values and. If you collect, I don't know, like 5 or 8 different lemmas together, then you finally get to this. So none of the proofs are, I mean, the proofs are all automatic, each individual one. It's just an induction, in this case, on T, because all of the functions are just primitive recursive on T. Finding all the little lemmas that you need, that's what takes the time. But in principle, as you could see, the code is intuitive. And the proofs, each individual lemma, when you look at it, say, yeah, yeah, that makes sense. But finding them is what requires one's time. So I think that's practically the end of 2-3 trees. So let's look at what's beyond 2-3 trees. Now, this is not a joke, the next one. Of course, there's also 2-3-4 trees. And it's not a joke because we're actually going to, in a virtual sense, use them in the next. And of course, you could go on doing that, but that doesn't make sense, except that, so this is, of course, like 2-3 trees, but with many more cases. And in the general situation, there are these called these things called B trees or AB trees, and I assume you've seen them in the Grundlagen Algorithmen Datenstrukturen. At least these ones are covered there, and that's where you have a tree where the nodes have between degree A and degree B. And we're not covering the general case; we're just covering the special case. Why are we covering the special case? It's because, as it turns out, these 2-3, or rather their, I don't know, should we call them uncles, their relatives, the 2-3-4 trees, they are isomorphic to something that is very well known in the literature, namely so-called red-black trees. And so that's why I introduced the 2-3 nodes, 2-3 trees, and then we will now move on to red-black nodes, red-black trees, and our intuition will help us to understand what's going on there, because if you introduce the red-black trees without this idea of having a 2 or a 3 and a 4 node, they can be pretty mysterious. So, red-black trees. What's the idea here? So again, they're in the material, in the repository. And the idea is that you encode 2, 3, 4 trees as binary trees. So you don't have 3 different kinds of nodes, but you just have the usual binary nodes, but composition of those binary nodes then make up bigger nodes. And we use an additional flag in each node to express the grouping. And this is the idea. Over here we have our original 2, 3, 4 trees. Up here we have our, there on the right side we have the encoding as a binary tree. So the leaf doesn't need much encoding. A binary node doesn't need much encoding either. How about a ternary node? Well, there are 2 ways of encoding a ternary node. You can either encode it like this with a 2 node inside a 2 node on the left, or, of course, a 2 node inside a 2 node on the right. Both of them are valid encodings of a 3 node. And why is one of them red? Well, that's precisely because they are red-black trees, and the additional flag, the color tells you that the sub-tree here, the red one, is really part of a bigger node. It's not not a proper sub-tree, but it's part of a bigger node. That's the idea of the color. And if you have a 4 node, well, then you can, just like we see here, encode it as a 2 node with 2 nodes as subtrees. And both cases, the subtrees are again red. So that's the correspondence between 2, 3, 4 trees on the left and the red-black trees on the right. And so all we need now is to move our intuition from the left side to the right side, but the code will not be directly sort of just a direct image of the of this code, I think at least. And the proofs, I think also the proofs will be similar, but I don't know whether you can really. Well, we should be able to transfer things from the 2, 3, 4 case to the red-black tree case, except we don't do that, because then we would have to have the 2, 3, 4 trees, and they just have many more constructors. Well, they have one other constructor, and therefore you get many more auxiliary functions, so it's just more overhead, although conceptually they're like the 2, 3 trees. So that's why we're redoing the proofs and the algorithms, because we really want things specialized to the red-black trees. Yeah, red means I'm part of a bigger node. So, now we need to re-express our invariants. They still need to capture the same idea, but they are, we need to express them now in terms of the red-black trees. So, what should be the color of the root?
Black.
Yeah, because it's not part of something else. Now, this is a convention that comes in handy, that we also consider the leaf to be black. That will help us with the next invariant. Namely, the next invariant tells us what happens if a node is red. What would you intuitively say, what does that imply if some node is red? What does it imply about the neighborship? Yes?
It's parallel, it has to be black.
Right. But that's an awkward invariant because it talks about the parent of a node. And even if you're in an imperative situation, but you don't have links back, then it's kind of, you can't express that properly. So it's easy to talk about the children. Right, the children must be black, and that works because we consider the leaves to be black. And finally, something about the height of the tree. any suggestion here? You've had your seat already. Somebody else, please.
The same number of black
nodes. Yeah. And this is what we call the black height of a tree. And it's uniquely defined. Okay, so now let's make this into a formula. Or into formulas, into functions. So we have a new data type of color, red or black, and we have just a modified version of the usual binary nodes, where we also have a color component in the node. And then the leaf is still written as a leaf, but you can either write a colored node like this, or you can use this abbreviation where I use a capital R for a red node, and then of course you just need the subtrees LAR. So that's an abbreviation for this one. And if you write a capital B, it's a black node. So it's just to save some space. And now we need these invariants and a function to extract the color from a node. So the color of a leaf is just set to black, and the color of a node is just the color component. And we also have a paint function that paints a node in a particular color. So, of course, a leaf, you can't paint a leaf. The leaf is by definition black. And if you paint something else, then you really replace the color component by the argument of the paint function. And now we come to the invariants. So, a red-black tree is a predicate on these trees, and it expresses these structural invariants. And this is what it says. The last one says the color of the root node is black. And then we have two auxiliary invariants, the color invariant and the height invariant. And they are defined separately. And also in the proofs, for finding the proofs, it's typically easier if you separate them, because you have more intuition, and it's often that one invariant might not hold in the middle of of some transformation, but the other one holds, and so you need to, it's good to split the two parts up. So the color invariant, what does it say? Well, it says that about this, that every red node must have the children must be black. And so the leaf has nothing to say, and for the node, both the subtrees must conform to the color invariant. And if the color of a node is red, then the color of the left and the color of the right subtree must be black. And the height invariant, that's the one that says the black height is uniform, so the path of every the number of black nodes on any path to a leaf is the same. And so here it's just recursively, if you have a node, then both the left and the right subtree must satisfy the invariant, and the black height of both subtrees must be the same. And the black height is now, so BH is just a shorthand for black height, because, of space reasons. And the black height of a node of a leaf is zero, and the black height of a node, well, if the node is colored black, then it's the black height of the left subtree plus one, else the black height of the left subtree. Now, you may ask yourself why the black height of the left subtree and not of the right subtree. It shouldn't make any difference, because we're using this black height invariant always in the context where we know that the color, the height invariant holds, and therefore the black height of the two subtrees should be the same. So therefore it's just random whether I pick L or R here. Of course, if you don't know that the height invariant holds, then it will make a difference. So the notion of the black height, informally, the notion of a black height is only well defined if it's a red black tree. And the first result about red black trees that we can get fairly directly from the invariant is that in a red black tree, the height of the tree is less or equal twice the logarithm of the size, well, the number of leaves of the tree. And I will try to give you a proof that's not fully formal, but I think is fairly intuitive. So let me just get my things together here. Yes.
So we're now taking a global view, and I'm not sure, I haven't tried to convert this proof into a formal proof. There is a formal proof, of course, in the file, but it doesn't, I don't think it corresponds one-to-one to this global idea. And the global idea is we now, in our head, contract the red-black tree into a 2-3-4 tree. So contract T to corresponding 2-3-4 tree T prime. So we've now merged all of the red nodes into the parent nodes to make 3 and 4 nodes. And now we have two consequences. The first one is quite clear to see. What is the relationship of the height of T prime and the height of T? Of course, by contracting, the height of T has become, the height of T prime is smaller, but I would like a greater equal relationship between the two, but now I have to put in a factor somewhere. Yep.
Factor of 2.
Right. On which side?
On the right side.
Everybody happy? Yes. I'll put it here because I think just intuitively it's a tiny bit more intuitive. What happens here, this is a big tree where you collapse nodes, right? And in the, there's one extreme where you only have black nodes, then no collapsing happens. Then this height here is really identical to that height. And there's the other extreme where you have always alternations between red and black. And then you really get, when you compress this, you get the height. But in general, you get something between half the height and the original height. So therefore, it would be greater than, this is the most optimistic case, that everything was red-black, and you've really collapsed it to half the height, but in general you won't collapse it to half the height, you collapse it to something larger, and not half the height. Because, yeah, in the extreme case, it really is these two values, height of t prime and height of t, are the same. So certainly if you half this one, it'll still be regular than it will. But if you find this more intuitive, you can also write it like that. And this is actually the one that will be. And something else follows. But this is a bit lengthier. The number of leaves in T, so remember this is the number of nodes plus one, which is just the number of leaves. We had a relationship of, for binary trees, that the number of leaves was bounded from below by 2 to the something. Can somebody remember that? Not quite. 2 to the height is the is an upper bound. We had another function which was only briefly mentioned, but it was mentioned. That was the minimal height. So if you think of that, that was the length of the shortest path. And so this is, in fact, the number of leaves is 2 to the minimal, greater or equal 2 to the minimal height of T. Now, T is a red flag tree. The minimal height of T is the shortest path to a leaf in T. How is that related to 2 to the black height of T? Or rather, how is the minimal height related to the black height?
Very cool.
No, not necessarily. Yes, the black hat is less wrinkled. And then the whole thing is less wrinkled because here we are counting fewer nodes. And of course, this only I think this also means the fact that we're in a red black tree. I mean, the invariant holds because otherwise this isn't properly defined. I mean, it's defined, but it can be not a sensible value. So here we need the invariant, the red black tree of T. But how about this one now? What is that relationship?
Since it's collapsed, it should be smaller. That's it.
You've said something too often, so I want somebody who hasn't said anything today yet, otherwise we're not going to make any progress. So this was not the correct answer. Okay. And I don't think you'll find it in your portable phone. Yes, I know, but you said something already, so we're not letting the other people off the hook. Yes.
It should be equal.
It should be equal because the process of getting from T to T prime is exactly the process of just getting rid of all the red nodes. So the height of this tree is just the black height of that tree. So it's really here is the identity, and therefore, of course, here is the identity. Same as here. And now we've got it because now if you take logarithms, then you have what. You want there with the help of this one, because now we have height of t is less or equal 2 times height of t prime, which is a
less recall, the 2 times the logarithm of this one. So I'm just putting together the two inequations that we have further up, and we take the logarithm of the second inequation.
So. Good question. Mm-hmm. So couldn't you also prove this by saying when we have the black height, then we have, so that's the number of black nodes in the path to the deep. And if we look at the red nodes, then at most half of the height of the at most half the nodes on the path to the leaf can be red nodes because of the how we constructed the left tree.
Yes.
And then we could also show it. So. Because when the black head is equal everywhere, then and if we only consider the length of a path with black nodes only, then it's the logarithm. And then if we have red nodes in between, then it's at most 2 times the logarithm.
Yeah, that intuition is right, but I don't think I think when you're trying to prove it into really proper formulas, then you will end up with something like this. Because you see, the 2, 3, 4 trees, they are just in some sense imaginary, because the minimal, all of this is T itself, and here the T prime, we didn't really need it, it's just the 2 to the black height. So I think you can, your intuition will lead you to more or less that same proof. But the intuition is correct, but it's not very formal. And then we need to program the insertion functions. So this may look a bit arbitrary, that we have an auxiliary ins function, and then we paint the result of that ins function black. Why do we need to do that? Well, the fact is that if you remember, the ins function is like the ins function on these 2, 3, 4 trees, so it may return an overflow value. And in our case, the overflow value will just be a tree that has a red root rather than a black root. But that's perfectly okay. When you get to the top, you don't need to worry about overflow anymore. You just paint that black, that red node black if it isn't black already. So this is why this is necessary, because in the intermediate stages you may have trees that are not proper red-black trees there, because their root may be red. Everything below will be okay. And this already shows you that these proofs are a little bit tricky, because you will now have to work with 2 invariants. The invariant that says the root is black, and the without that statement, the root is black, because in the middle of the of your transformations, you will get trees that are not red black trees, or they're almost red black trees without the root. And this is the actual insert function. So, how do we deal with that one? Well, the base cases I think are not very interesting. Let's just look at the 2 interesting cases. So if you're inserting into a black node or inserting into a red node. So let's first look at the black one. If you're inserting into a black node, then of course you have to check which of the 2 subtrees you insert into, and then you insert it in there, and then you rebuild. This is the function that rebuilds the new node from the modified left node and the original right node. And so what does this function have to do? This function will have to adjust any color violations. So it'll not just put these 3 things together into a node, but it'll also check the color of the 2 subtrees, and we'll see if there's a color violation of the red-black scheme, and then it will adjust those colors. And similarly here, and if you insert into a red node, well, that looks very easy. You just basically leave it as a red node and you insert into the subtree, into the corresponding subtree. Why don't we need to rebalance anything here? It might be, for example, the result of inserting this might produce a red subtree, and then we have a violation, red with a red subtree. So why is it not necessary to take care of that here? Simply because if you insert into a red function, you must have come from a black node. And therefore, the black node will have this balance function, and the black node, the balance function coming from the black node will take care of the recoloring. So here we don't need to. So that's exactly the situation that I alluded to. So in the middle of your transformations, you may have trees that are ill-colored with respect to the red-black tree scheme, but then from time to time, or in other words, every second node, you will take care of them by readjusting the colors. And so this is what we now need to do. And it's a fairly simple idea. What can go wrong with a coloring scheme? You may have two red nodes nested inside each other, and what you do, you just color, you just get rid of the red-red conflict and try and just use red and black alternately, but you may then, as a result, still produce a node that's red at the root. So you want to combine this balance function, combines two nodes, and an element in the middle, and ideally you just make this, but only if the color is right. And so you want to treat these violations, these occurrences of red-red, in either the left or the right subtree. So we have two functions depending on where the violation can occur. So here, let's just look at the balance on the left. And so here we have a situation where a violation has occurred in the left subtree because you have a red-red subtree there. So the root is red and the left subtree of it is again red. And what you do is you then turn this into this red followed by black. And so you still have a root that's red, but underneath you now have black subtrees. So if you prove eventually that things work, you will find that you can assume that all of these subtrees on the left-hand side, they are proper red-black subtrees, and then on the right-hand side, therefore, you could just put a black on top of them, that works fine, and then you put a red on top of them. That's also okay. A red may have black subtrees. It's just the only possible violation is that now you're returning a red subtree at the very top, and that then gets painted black in the end. So there's no problem with having red nodes intermediately. And here, this is the second line. It's just a dual case where the node is red and the right subtree is also red. And we do the same thing. We return red with two black subtrees. So it's just a very local recoloring. It's a bit more than recoloring because you're also rearranging the nodes, because here you had T4 was an individual subtree, and now it gets combined with T3 and this element in the middle, the A3. So this is one of these famous rotations. So you're just shifting. I mean, it doesn't look like much like a rotation here. It just looks like you're shifting the boundaries between the subtrees, but that's what it is. And then there is one last case, because these are the two cases how you can get a red-red violation. And then there's a last case. Yeah, so this is the principle. A final equation that says, well, if none of the two previous equations fired, then it must be this one. You have a situation where L doesn't have a red-red violation, and so you just turn it to a black node. Because why a black node and not a red node? Because this function is called in the branch of the insert where you're inserting into a black node. And so if no violation occurred, then it should again be a black node. And that's it. And there's a symmetric function. And I don't intend to go through the proof, the preservation of the invariant. It's again similar to what we have seen in the 2-3 trees. You need to talk about the color, and you also need to talk about the height. And so it's not as simple as that. You need, again, a handful or so of auxiliary lemmas that talk about height and color, and also this additional invariant that says, oh, this node is almost a red leg tree, except that the root may be red rather than black. So it gets a bit verbose. And then there's the deletion function, which is, kind of dual. The auxiliary function del may return a red node. That would be the signal of an underflow in this case, and then you just paint it black at the top. If you're not at the top, then if you delete it from a leaf is trivial, and this is the interesting. This is the wrong version of the slides. This is interesting. I don't know why. This is correct. I've just streamlined them a little bit, but we can look at this one. That's okay. If you delete in some node, you don't care about the color. What you do is you compare your element with the element in the node, and then you either call it del L or a del R function, which is essentially just, will again call del, but will also insert a balance function. So it's like the insert situation, but now it's the delete situation. So if I replace this call here by the function body, then here you have essentially, this call, you have two choices. If you're deleting from a black node, then you need to rebalance after the deletion. So you just recursively delete from that black node, and then you balance the colors again. And if you're not deleting from a black node, this must be a red node, and then you can build a red node without any rebalancing. So it's pretty much like the insert function, except that it's pretty similar to this one, that you have these two cases, inserting and deleting from red or a black node, and in one case you need to rebalance, and in the other case you don't. And the idea of how to delete when you... So you're deleting from this node, and you're deleting an element X that is equal to A, then... I don't know if there are alternatives, but the one that I'm working with uses the combine function. You have this already in one of the exercises, just for normal binary trees. If you delete from a binary tree, and in the middle of the tree you find a proper node, and you have to delete that element from the node, then you can write a combine function that takes the two subtrees and combines them again into a new binary tree. And this is what... This is the method that's being used here, but I'm not showing you the combined function. It's again a lengthy case distinction about the different patterns that you can have of reds and blacks that you're combining, it's in some sense more of the same, although getting this right is non-trivial. It was the first... The first functional version of the red-black trees came just with an insert function, and then it took a number of years before somebody published a delete function as well, because these different patterns and case distinctions are a bit tricky. Those slides shouldn't be the ones that they are. I don't quite understand this, why I'm seeing the wrong version here. But in principle, that's exactly what the new slides also say, but just in a more streamlined manner. Okay, any last questions about 2-3, 2-3-4, red black trees? If not, then thank you for coming on this rich day, and I see you next week, and probably we'll do Patricia trees then, but I'm not quite sure. So see you then.
Also ich hatte es aber schon vor zwei, also im zweiten Semester war das schon vor, das sind jetzt die sechsten, vor zwei Jahren.
Ah, hier ist so zwei jetzt gekommen.
Nee, vor zwei Jahren habe ich die AD gehabt, ja. Vor einem Jahr dazu. Ich weiß ja nicht, weil es kann ja sein, dass sie das so sehr klar gerne
hat. Ich glaube, das Skriptum ist jetzt relativ stabil.
Ja. Also ich habe, wir haben es nicht gemacht, ich habe das in der Accent-Biologie gemacht.
Ja,
das ist ja auch was.
Ja, genau. Ich wollte zumindest nicht mit der Grundvorlesung überlappen.
Ja.